Before we start, a quick message for our landscaping listeners. On May the 8th, Mark Bradley, the founder and CEO of LMN, and myself are doing a free web class on how to create more accountability in your business through effective one-on-one meetings with your staff. Get your crews in the field and your team in the office on track with laser focus through Breakthrough Academy's GSR system. We're going to teach you how to do it on May 8th. Don't miss it. Click the link in the description to register now. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Contract Revolution. This is your host, Benji. Look, the labor shortage is not going to improve anytime soon. I'm sorry to be a Debbie Downer, but that's just the truth. And this is why smart contractors, that's you, are investing in their employer brand quite heavily, in fact. The way that you package and communicate your place of work to potential employees matters more now than it ever has. The talent that you need has options, so make sure that your business is the best option for them, right? Andrew Hansen is the founder and CEO of Site Partners. They're a specialized marketing agency that works exclusively in the industrial sector. And over the last 5 years, he's shifted from helping businesses get customers to helping them find talent. In fact, he says over 50% of the work he does for some of the biggest contractors in North America is purely focused on talent and recruitment. So buckle up for an employer brand deep dive. Let's get started.
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, where we unpack the systems, tactics, and skills you need to take your fast-growing contracting business to the next level.
If you're here to learn what it takes to scale up, work less, and increase profitability, you've come to the right place.
Stay tuned to learn what separates the new breed of contractor from the old school, and welcome to your ultimate guide on the business of contracting.
Andrew, it's good to see you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to see you as well. I'm excited for this.
Thanks for coming on. I think some context would be useful for the listeners just so they know a little bit about Site Partners, a little bit about what you guys are up to, and therefore a little bit where this whole conversation that we're going to have comes from. So just give us the brief overview on you guys.
Sure. Happy to do so. So, I mean, this is the one audience that we're probably talking to that would relate with this story or get excited with this story. But some background on myself and Site Partners. So Site Partners, we're a marketing and creative agency focused exclusively on the industrial sector. And we classify the industrial sector as construction, manufacturing, and any resource-based industry. And so we've been around for about 6 years. We're mostly based out of the Canadian market. We do some work in the US as well, but we've got a team of about just over 40 people. And our primary focus is on helping elevate and support our industrial clients in the work that they do. And so how we do that, as a full service agency, we've got a pretty robust practice and strategy and brand, which I believe we'll talk about today. And then we do a lot of video production, marketing, creative campaigns, and everything to really help our clients win business, grow their brand, and attract talent. So it's been a fun journey. We have an awesome team, amazing clients, and fortunately an industry that's continued to grow a lot over the years and continues to do so.
So segueing into this conversation today, you mentioned attracting talent. Like how much work are you guys currently being asked to do by your clients on the employer brand and overall recruitment front? And then maybe two-part question, like what are you hearing from your clients around the need for a really strong employer brand right now?
Yeah, good question. I mean, it's changed a lot over the years. Pre-COVID, we helped a lot of our clients with demand generation, attracting the right clients, attracting the right work. And then post-COVID, and as we've seen the industry really grow quickly and demand really increase, we've really shifted a lot of our focus on helping our clients attract the right people and retain the right people. So to speak to your question directly, I'd say about half our work generally lands in the realm of employer branding and helping attract talent. And that's because a lot of the good contractors today, brands that have been in the industry for a long time, they have the work, they just need the people. And so we generally work with those clients to unpack their story. You know, a lot of organizations invest a significant amount of resources into their marketing programs, but a lot of that investment doesn't follow into the recruitment, employer branding side and attracting talent. And we advise a lot of our clients, you know, similar to the way you view marketing your business, you really got to attract the right candidates to your brand. And so we've done a lot of work in that area. We can share a little bit more examples today, but it's an active area. And if you're good and you're busy, which most contractors are, the biggest question that keeps contractors up at night is we need the right people.
50% is not a small amount. We're talking about a 40-person agency, and literally, you know, if you were to just look at your resources, time, and people, roughly half of the pie is dedicated to working with the clients you have in some way, shape, or form on their needs to attract people. So that data point says everything I need to know. Maybe just here at the beginning, let's define what we're talking about here, Andrew. Like, what is your personal take? I don't want just like the textbook answer. People can Google this, obviously. Give me your thoughts. Like, how do you define employer brand?
Yeah, good question. I mean, we get really technical in that answer, but I think the easiest way to explain it is just currently your brand, how is it positioned in the marketplace for talent? How do they view your business? How do they view an opportunity to build a career at your organization? So it's really just, how is your brand perceived from candidates looking to apply? It's simple terms. If I'm a foreman, superintendent, if I'm a skilled tradesperson, if I'm thinking about an organization, you have an idea of that brand in the market. Just like when you look at buying products that we do every day, whether it's a type of car, Chevy, Ford, Dodge, you have that perspective of that brand in the marketplace. So employer branding is really, how is your brand perceived in the marketplace by hard to reach skilled trades?
Is there anything that's happened recently in the last 5 years on an economic level, a demographic level, world events, whatever, in the last, let's say, 5 years? I mean, I might even extend that to 10 years. Like, let's just say the last 5 to 10 years. What is there anything that has happened that has put a newfound emphasis, a newfound need on this employer brand thing? Like, why is this so critical now versus before?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things that jump out. I mean, number one, we've heard it in lots of podcasts. Every article you read is this retiring workforce. So there's a new generation that's entering called the skilled trades, the construction, the industrial sector. And with that, they have a different expectation for what the recruitment journey should look like. They're used to a consumer level experience tailored to their needs on a mobile device. And so that entire recruitment experience has changed. And I think the secondary piece, which is more maybe on the softer side, is, you know, post-COVID and, you know, in a world where there's lots of work, which is changing as of late, people really are, skilled employees really have choice. They can choose where they want to work and they can choose the lifestyle they want. Some skilled people really want to have a work-life balance and that's okay. Others want to make a great career and make great financial returns. So I think you're seeing two major drivers. Is one is it is a younger workforce. It's a changing workforce in regards to how they want to walk through the employee experience. And number two is, I'd say skilled talent, they have a better idea of what they want in a career. And I think we've seen that a lot of the last couple of years to say before it's, hey, I want a job. Now it's, well, I want a job that allows me to do X, Y, and Z. Mm. And so those two factors, what we create, we see it creates a marketing opportunity for organizations to be clear on both those fronts of meeting that, you know, hard to reach candidate where they are.
The way that I think about this, and I've always defined it in my mind, just... here at the beginning of the conversation before we get into strategies or tactics. And this is, you know, a lot of you listeners will know this. So if I'm boring you, you can skip ahead 30 seconds. But for the more, you know, newer business owners who haven't invested in yet and they're earlier on the learning curve about this whole conversation, the way that I think about it, which I find useful, is you need to think of your place of work as a product that you are trying to sell. So your place of work is a product and the buyer is the potential worker. So how do you package that product effectively? How do you communicate that package effectively? How do you add features and benefits and colors and graphics and images? Just like you're walking down the cereal aisle in the grocery store and you go, I want that one versus that one. You know, like what are you doing to communicate the advantages of your product? Because that is what it is versus someone else's product. And I just, that little way of describing it, I've always found useful. So today we're going to talk about like recruitment campaign strategies, how to build an employer brand effectively, how to own your story and tell it well. There's going to be some high level strategic stuff. There's going to be some really like granular tactical stuff that you can do. I'm excited to dive in. But before we do, let's talk wardrobe, because obviously my outfit is on fire today. I'm going to share you this a very, very quick story about Dylan and Richard. So Docs Unlimited, owned by Dylan Downey and Richard Harris. They specialize in docks. Surprise, surprise. Particularly adjustable pipe docks for the big water of Georgian Bay and Lake Huron. So these guys are in Ontario. They've been in Breakthrough Academy for 2.5 years. Their coach is Harold Fredericks. Live and operate in Owen Sound, Ontario. I always ask for a challenge and a win. So listen closely. Our big challenge of this year is hiring and training a dock foreman. As we have grown, it has become more apparent that we need a crew member in a more leadership role to help take some of the load off of management. In order to train this new dock foreman, we also need to build out all of our operational SOPs, which is a new thing for us. So that's their challenge. A recent win. We just signed the employee agreement with the new dock foreman, exclamation mark. So step one is done. Now we just have to get him trained. We also hired a new office manager just before Christmas that has been taking a lead role in the back end of creating all of her SOPs. She has really allowed us to focus on the hiring while she creates, prepares, edits all the standard operating procedures. Andrew, any thoughts for Dylan or Richard?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, congratulations. You're making some awesome kind of movement in growing your organization. I think they're a great example of a niche business when you look at on the marine side.
Super
on docks.
Niche.
Like it's, yeah, what they do is pretty unique. I think there's a huge need for it. So I think we'll get into a bit of the recruitment side, but you know, leaning into that, marine and docks isn't for everybody. And not to generalize here, but I'm going to do that. People that are attracted to that lifestyle, whether it's hunting, fishing, recreational boating, like you either love boats, or you don't love boats. There's no intermediate. And I think leaning into that methodology and that story could be really unique, whether that's attracting talent, the right clients. And so I'd say lean into that story, lean into the work that they're doing. You know, it's physical work, it's dynamic work. You know, you're not going to be dry throughout the day. There's going to be cold, challenging, but you can see your work at the end of the day. There's probably nothing more. I pull myself docks in and out throughout seasons, and nothing feels better than when you've put a full system in and you're looking back on your work. So I think they're hitting a couple buckets, which is unique. And I would say lean into that story, attract, go after the right people. It's very difficult for those that don't know the type of work. Onboarding is challenging, and turnover is tough. So go to the right audience from day one, lean into that story. I'm sure they have a culture of hard work and celebrating the wins, and let that attract the type of people.
They do. And I know Dylan a little too. They're big, like it's a really small town. So that's always a, you know, really, really small population base. You're looking for, you know, a needle in a small haystack. Anyway, guys, thanks for Dylan. Richard, thanks for the shirt and the hat. If you're listening and you want to work with over 600 other contractors, like Docs Unlimited in the industry's best accelerator for contractors, that's Breakthrough Academy. That's us. I'll put something on screen here that you can click on or down in the description. Check us out. See if we might be a fit for you. We systemize contracting businesses for growth. Okay, sales pitches out of the way. Let's get into, we've defined what we mean by employer brand. Let's get into some strategies, just like high level. What are the key employer brand strategies that you want to lay out for us here at the beginning, Andrew?
Yeah, we can start high level and then go deep. Yeah. I think it's overwhelming when you look. It's like when you look at marketing, where do you start, right? You look at employer branding, you look at, you know, branding your organization for top candidates. It can be overwhelming. I'll generally look at 7 or 8 kind of buckets that drive a lot of value and kind of start the conversation early internally. And most likely, a lot of you guys are probably doing these things, just not systemized. And so I think that's an encouraging piece. But I think the first one that always jumps out, and this is a great marketing advice, we do this with a lot of our industrial B2B clients, but it's also great recruitment and retention pieces. The first one is owning that story. You either tell your story or someone else does. And I think that's a powerful statement that we tell to a lot of clients is be progressive, own your story. What does that mean? Look at your competition, look at the industry, and where do you sit? And really take time to shape that positioning statement for who you guys are as an organization. And I think now in a time, like we talked about earlier, it's like, it's a time to be bold, own it, scare some people away, attract others. I mean, Site Partners is a great example of that. From day one, we say we're a specialized agency for the industrial sector. Right away, some candidates will never apply to work for our company, and that's okay. Other times, people that love the industrial sector, love construction, love manufacturing, love forestry, get excited about the work we do. So that's kind of number one, is just owning that story.
Can you put a finer point on that? Because I want to this is a really important point, but I want to make sure we're clear. Like a lot of people, I'm building a website right now. I'm working with a few different agencies, looking at a few different options. And one of the things I've learned, and the feedback has been really clear, is like, hey, you know what? You know that About Us page on your website where it's like, here's us and here's me as a kid, and I always had a passion for construction, so I started this thing and blah, blah, blah. No one cares. Nobody goes to those sites. Nobody goes to those pages. So if that's not what we mean. Like, what do you mean by own your story? It's not some boring, like, life story. Here's me when I was two with a hammer. And like, you get what I'm saying? How do we do this in a way that is, like, concise? It's new age. It is edgy. It's highly consumable, highly shareable, rather than the age old, super boring mid-90s about us or corporate mission page.
Yeah, I think to get tactical and, like, how would you do it? I mean, it's very similar to probably what your coaches work with your members on, which is being specific to your niche. I'll look at, you know, home building or landscaping. If from a landscape perspective, what I mean, own your story. Are you a production landscape contracting company where you're just doing a ton of volume, you're doing a ton of work, but through that volume, you have the equipment, the people, the resources just to put out a ton of work at a competitive price point? Or are you a boutique, high custom, high touch, very design-led landscaping company? Either one of those are landscaping companies, but the markets they go after and the type of people they want to work for their companies are totally different. And so when I say owning your story is, you're going to see like headline website copy, we're this blank landscaping company, we do this. That's going to be pulled into your social media copy. It's going to be pulled into your job ads that you post out. And that's what I mean by owning your story is know who you're best suited for, the type of work, and be very confident in that because you're going to attract the type of person that fits that mold. The worst thing you can do is if you're highly attentive detail landscaping company, hire someone that loves production, just loves moving dirt. They're going to kind of struggle to be a part of that organization. Not all the time, but I think owning your story is just being very definitive in what you do. And you're going to help increase the chance of that recruitment journey being successful. And it's got double-sided benefits. Like we talked about before we started recording, like good employer branding is often good marketing. Mm-hmm. And so they don't have to be totally different. It's just being specific in what you're doing. And that helps candidates. They're going to follow you on that journey and say, wow, like, The art that landscape company takes into custom boutique, like they're going to get excited about that over time. So hopefully that answers kind of specific.
Yeah, no, it's great. Let's keep rolling.
Next one, I would say, just jumping around, I think top candidates today, they want a tailored digital experience. And I think we talked about this earlier, but we're in a world where we're used to consumer activity. So B2C, how we buy cars, how we buy tools. We want a digital first experience. You want it to be easy. A lot of times for industrial firms, they make the job experience pretty choppy. It could be, you know, upload a PDF resume or, you know, they land on an Indeed job posting, but they're not able to connect back to the website and the story. They're not able to see video and assets. We really encourage our clients, like, what does that entire what does that entire employee journey look like from maybe when they see a digital ad to how they apply? And we've worked with clients to, if recruitment is such a big focus, spin up a custom careers page. Not just a page on the website, but an entire custom, you know, careers experience. I'll look at BTA as an example. You know, BTA could have a careers page on their website. Someone's going to find it. Someone's going to experience, you know, instead of creating, you know, careers at BTA.com as a standalone URL where you're driving a ton of content and a ton of traffic and you're curating that entire web experience for a candidate. And so that's a big point we try and say for employer branding too. If you really care about that people experience, own that touch point from start to finish for that candidate. They're going to feel it. It's going to be way better than your competitors. And there's easy wins that you can do there from video assets with staff that have worked your organization for many, many years. You know, put that front and center on that careers website and just really looking at that entire digital experience. How would I want to purchase? You know, a lot of times a job is one of your most important decisions you'll make besides a spouse or a house, but up there, like job is a huge piece. Like this is a big experience. Let's not kid ourselves if someone's just going to jump on Facebook, hit apply and start the next day. Like they're going to consume, they're going to read, they're going to study, they're going to watch. The amount of times I've had staff that work at Site Partners say, yeah, I followed your journey for 3 to 4 years. I'm ready to start. They've followed us for 3 to 4 years. And I think similar to a lot of people on this call, like top candidates, and we're not talking just workers. We're talking employees and staff members are going to drive your business forward. And that's a big piece there. So I think that's the next one is the B2C experience and really kind of change it. I'll pause there if you've got a question on that one.
I was going to ask a little bit about this idea of going low friction in terms of the funnel that you build, like a clunky experience. We need a custom CV and it's got to be in this file format. And then you upload the file and then you hit submit and the load screen is slow and you don't really get a confirmation. So you're not sure if the business got it. So you go do it again. I'll go out and say, like, I think the actual application process as a marketer, someone who works on funnels all the time, it's pretty Like it's not smooth. It's not fast. It's high friction, not low friction. And then you wonder why you have no applicants. Have you anything else you would comment about this idea of making it a very like high gloss, new age, fast, low friction process?
Yeah, I mean, you said it all. I think that's going to be their assumption of what it's like to work with a company, right? You know, we talk about as they experience your brand digitally, they're going to be like, wow, these guys are really dialed in. They really care about their brand, the process. This is a company I want to work for. You know, I'll caveat that with the other piece too, is like as a good agency, like where we're specialized, like we really emphasize strategy, data, research, and planning. When we work with our clients, we really start to unpack like, who is that ideal candidate? Who is that person that's going to drive your business? And like, and where are they? So before you come up with any creative, before you come up with any dynamic campaigns, like really start to tackle the business questions. And I'll bring this up in an example because we're talking high touch here. There's organizations, there's people on this call that maybe they're on a manufacturing facility. Maybe they like, let's use the word skilled trades loosely, mm-hmm. because I think anyone that works in the industrial sector, construction is skilled.
Sure.
But there's going to be like a Red Seal component and there's going to be a frontline worker on the manufacturing side. We haven't done these campaigns, but I've read about them and they're very unique where it's just thinking smart of like, there's nothing to say you can't park a billboard on a Tim Hortons at 6 a.m. with a job ad with the back of a truck and a vinyl sign. Like that's a unique way to think differently. We've seen others where some people just, it's intimidating to start the job experience. We've seen some companies custom build, you know, a modular unit outside of like subway stations and sky trains where they have virtual screens where you just walk up and it's a live recruiter on a Zoom screen and they just say, talk to us. What would you like to work for? And they apply with two clicks of a button. Like just think differently and think creatively. But it comes back to that data point of just that employee experience. Don't be just like everyone else. So I want to share those examples because some people listening, it's like, yeah, how you attack an operations manager or, you know, a sales manager is different going to be like a frontline worker. It's just thinking differently and just thinking smart. And
totally.
Back to owning that story of like, what do you have to offer? It's going to be different. So
what are your thoughts? Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to keep going on the
other example. Yeah, sure, keep going. I'll ask my questions later.
Yeah, I think the other two ones, I mean, this is probably more of a challenge to people listening and you get this all the time. So, you know, take it with, you know, as well as you can, but executive leadership and executive brand. I think regardless, I mean, we all have imposter syndrome. I think anyone that's running an organization, you know, we are making up as we go every day. And no matter how advanced you get, I think we see the challenges that we have. But I think from an executive brand perspective, you as a leader and your C-suite and your leadership team is the more vocal you can be online on social, it's going to drive immediate results. We always advise our clients, a corporate page, use LinkedIn as an example, a site partner's LinkedIn page. If I post a job or we post a job through the LinkedIn page of our site partner's page, it's going to do pretty well. It's going to do well. We've invested in our brand. It drives job ads. If I post on LinkedIn and I post a passionate story about what we're looking for and who we're after, and I do some dynamic photos, it always outperforms. And I think that's a challenge to anyone listening. If talent is important to you, if you're saying, oh, I wish I had the people, well, what are you doing about it? And you don't have to hire a fancy agency like us, even though I would love that. So I'm not going to talk about the job, but like start with the basics, like tell your story. And if you're as passionate, like you started this business for a reason, post about it, talk about it, be dynamic, be personable. And it's out of your comfort zone, but even it's one post a month, one post a week, like people see that, you know, I posted yesterday, we, you know, 4 or 5 active roles right now. I posted yesterday. We had clients reshare our posts. We had past employees reshare our posts. We had, you know, references. We had 10, 15, 20 applications that day from that kind of my post. And I think my encouragement to you guys is you have personal brands. And at the end of the day, when they're making that decision, top candidates, they want to know who they're working for and just be bold. And the last one before I'll let you facilitate questions is that piece about storytelling. You know, storytelling really works. We're all hooked by story. And so use that in your messaging, use that, you know, if you've got I'll use landscaping again. If you had someone that joined you, you know, 10 years ago as a laborer and they're now vice president of operations, our partner, tell that story. You know, you have to bribe them and maybe, convince them to come on camera, but storytelling really works, whether it's video, whether it's case studies, whether it's talking with organized people that have been at your companies. That's really what draws people in. And because, you know, good talent isn't looking for jobs tomorrow. They're trying to be educated over time. And those type of stories really work themselves into that top candidate's perspective to say, hey, a year from now, 2 years from now, they have a couple kids. They, you know, have different objectives in life. Maybe that's the opportunity to work there. So those are kind of the buckets, you know, owning your story, investing that in employee experience, creating a, you know, a direct consumer digital kind of platform that allows it to be easy. Be smart, lead with your strategy, understand like what do you have to offer that's different. And then that executive leadership and the storytelling. Those are kind of the buckets that we see as like, if you look at employer branding, you're looking at driving results. Like these are all things that you guys can do. And a lot of our clients can do low touch, high touch. So I mean, I sound passionate about it because I am. It's like, we have a job to do, you know, for the industrial sector. You have two hurdles. It's how do you get someone to work at your organization, but how do we also change the perspective of industrial or construction in the trades and in the general public? And it's a challenge that we have every day.
I'll just kind of riff on a few thoughts here. So the personal branding piece, I think I'd like to comment on. I, as a lot of people close to me know, I'm not a social media person. I've been off of Instagram for 4 years. I go on Facebook like once a week. I go on LinkedIn occasionally. I am unfortunately going to have to counteract. I will be going back on Instagram. I will be investing in a LinkedIn following. I will be doing all this stuff, not because I'm actually a pretty private person. I don't have much of a vanity bone. But I cannot tell you how incredibly powerful personal brand is right now. And I, you know, it's kind of a trending topic in the social media world. You see a lot of founders, a lot of owners doing a little bit of like a content drip on their various channels to build up a following. When it comes to, I mean, two things, getting big clients that you want and landing big talent that you want. This is going to be 100% a different difference maker over the next 10 years. So I'm getting going on it now reluctantly. I will say this. There's some really, if you're like me and you hate screens and you want to spend as little time on them as possible, there are some really great apps. There's one called Freedom, which only partly works. And then there's another one. I just got it called, I'll find it later. I think it's called Swap. No. Freeform.
Yeah.
I can't remember. There are apps that you can get to basically control your screen time. So you give yourself windows where you can go on and do the stuff you need on social media. So you can engage with it from a business perspective, but then not be sucked into the algorithm like is what happens to me. So anyway, personal branding is powerful. I want to talk about employee experience for a second because we kind of skipped past that. Like we're going to talk about better ways to package and communicate what you do, but I don't want to blow past this point. Like the offer that you are offering the potential worker matters a great deal. If you don't pay very well and you have benefits and you're very inflexible with your schedule, we can talk about career pages and cool ads and all that stuff, but all you're doing is putting lipstick on a pig. And so the reality is like what you actually offer to the workplace needs to be, I would say the rule of thumb that I always use is it needs to be in the top 25%. You don't absolutely need to be like the highest payer. I mean, if that is your business and your market, maybe you have to be that. But I think generally speaking, if you can be in the top quartile of pay, benefits, and flexibility, which are generally the three things that workers are looking for, you have a snowball's chance in hell. If you're below that, forget it. All this stuff is kind of a moot point. Was there anything else that you would add about like that employee experience, the overall work offer that you're making?
Yeah, I think it goes back to like owning that story. It's like, what can you offer your employees that your competitors can't? Whether it's like, for sure, like you said, you have to have competitive pay and you have to have a comprehensive package. Like those are table stakes and you got to be at the front end of that. And I think that's one of the, and we're kidding ourselves if you think you're going to have this amazing culture and if you can like, if that's going to overcome a 25 to 30% pay gap, like maybe for the short term, but not for the long term. Like you got to be leading in those indicators. I think the employee experience piece is like, you look at it in a marketing lens, cost per acquisition, you spend a lot of time to acquire customers. How do you retain those customers and how do you upsell those customers? And how do you grow those customers? It's similar to an employee experience. You did all this work to get them in the door. How do you develop those people? How do you, you know, celebrate them? How do you, you know, invest in that employee experience? And that's going to drive a ton of results. You're going to have more engaged staff. You're going to have higher referrals to, you know, other top candidates. So I think it's just really looking at that entire employee experience end to end, you know, recruitment, onboarding, promotion, development, and let those stories be told. And I think, you know, going back to that personal brand piece too, it's like, I think it's important speaking to this as well, is like telling those stories authentically is super important. Like you and I are, you know, even me saying do personal branding, like I don't like to do it personally.
I hate
it. I sit there and I'm like, I don't want to type this because I feel it's inauthentic. But, you know, I encourage like the way you talk to your staff, like off social media is the way you should be communicating on social media, because, you know, how you engage, like, you just want to be authentic, and your staff will feel it, your clients will feel it. So I think it's just starting small. And I think from the employee experience side perspective too, is you got to be authentic to what it's like to work at your firm all the way through, because people are going to find out pretty quickly. I say this a lot in job interviews. If any of my staff are listening to this, they'll laugh at this too. Like, a lot of our senior, like, we have a difficulty in hiring top talent because of we're a niche business and it's dynamic. And a lot of times in the recruitment journey, like, we try and scare candidates away in the interview stage. It's like, hey, you're going to work really hard. It's dynamic. It's fast paced. And just being really, like, overly authentic in that interview process, you know, similar to that employee experience when they do onboard, they do the experience like, hey, this is great. This is what I signed up for. And I think, I don't know if this was your question directly, but owning that story piece is super important in the employee experience. So, you know, I use some examples here from, like, a brand perspective. Like, you can tell pretty quickly what it's like to work at a company like Apple versus Amazon. Like, all of us on this call can experience what it would be like. I'm generalizing here, but it's like, Amazon is an organization built on efficiency, on scale. Apple is a company, you know, built on design. Yes, there's some kind of situation that wouldn't be applied to that, but leaning into that employee experience is pretty critical to say what it's like to work there. I think other examples of, you know, the landscaping, you know, custom versus, you know, volume is just leaning into a bit of that story so that employee experience is matched with it. But
no, so go ahead.
No, that was it.
I wanted to ask you about some, like, I think you'd prepped a few, like, case studies or examples, or like you're able to talk about some of the work that you've done with some of these bigger brands. I think brands that our listeners might recognize in this sector, just to maybe color this in or give some examples. So walk us through some of the bigger projects or the bigger campaigns that you've done, what the strategy was behind them, and then what some of the net outcomes were.
Sure. Yeah, I'll share a couple, and I'll keep them relevant to our group. But I think a lot of it goes to the word you just said, strategy. So before we do any creative as an agency, and I think most marketing professionals would agree, comes down to the strategy. Like, what do you have to offer? What does this role have to offer? And then that's going to influence the creative strategy. And creative can often be the video asset, the storytelling piece, like what's being produced for the ad. So, you know, first example that came up was we were working with the largest equipment dealer in Canada for a specific type of brand. And this was a remote technician role. This was like Northern BC, hard to reach, very dynamic. We looked at the role, it's hard to recruit for. But when you looked at the details of that role, you looked and said, hey, cost of living is much more competitive than anywhere else in British Columbia. The nature and the beauty of hunting and fishing is just bar none, amazing and beautiful. And the type of people and the challenge, if you're working on big equipment, mining, remote operations, like, hey, there's something unique here. So we kind of identified the fishing, the hunting, high pay, great people, stable work. These were amazing attributes to that role that on a job for Indeed or wherever, how we'd post that, those attributes can't get flushed through on a job ad. So what we did was, you know, create almost a video series that you got to show the beauty in action. When you see a bald eagle sweep it, you know, landing, picking up a fish in crisp 4D definition, like, that's an engaging emotional piece. When you see the beauty of, you know, northern parts of British Columbia and you see that dynamic piece, like, that's going to evoke certain emotions to say, hey, maybe you got someone who's just 4 hours of rush hour in Vancouver and they're saying, I got to do something different. That ad is going to help attract that talent. So that was one example of just attracting hard to reach technical talent through the power of story, through the opportunity. Looking at the stats to say, hey, what could we offer here? What's offered? What's unique? Pull that into a story and let that drive results. And then you're going to see different campaigns, paid ads, go to market, all that fun stuff. But it really came with the strategy and the story. And so that was one example to say, hey, what did this job have to bring to the market? Let's pull into a narrative story and let people see that. And that's a great example for probably a lot of people on this call, like the doc, for example. It's like, let's tell some of that story and let it shine a little bit so that it's not going to be for everyone. Some people are going to watch that video and be like, why would I want to go hunting? Or why would I want to go fishing? For other people, that's their lifestyle. That's what they get up for in the morning. So it's not going to be for everyone, but it's going to be for the right people. Another story is a big engineering firm out of the US. I think, like all in the industrial sector, it's really hard to reach talented people. We did a really deep discovery with this group, pretty large company. We identified that most of the people and the leaders and the organizations at this company had been there a long, long time. And I think we're of a similar age. I think a lot of people on this call are in that 20, 30, 40 year old. Like, there's a lot of job hopping, right? People talk about, hey, back in the day, someone worked at a company for 20 years. it doesn't happen as much anymore. There's these 3-4 years, even 2-year turnovers. And so we did a ton of research with this large engineering firm we identified to say, hey, there's some people that are 35, 40 years old that have been here for 20 years and they've done 6 or 7 roles. They've been promoted. They've got this phenomenal story. So we said, hey, there's something here. And we came up with this really unique campaign called Being a Lifer and the opportunity that job hopping is overrated. And if you actually stay the course, work in an organization that's going to develop you and grow you, there's going to be this awesome opportunity. We looked at college technical talent entering the workforce to say, hey, it's exhausting to think if I have to like change careers 2, 3, 4 years. What if I just work somewhere paid well, taken care of, and there's huge opportunities? We created a docuseries, 5 or 6 docuseries of individuals that have worked at the company, told their story, told their opportunity, had a dynamic. And then there was this whole campaign built around being a lifer and the opportunity to build careers. So
there's an interesting point there about like doing deep discovery and finding out what is actually there in terms of an, because what you're looking for is an angle. You're looking for, there might be a lot of people who are listening, and you said this earlier, you know, how are you different? And they go, well, we're really not that different. There's like 20 painting companies who they pay about the same and they use the same paint and they use the same vehicles and we're competing over the same jobs. And that's a real question. Like if they can't answer, that's a problem. We got to help them figure that out. But I think what I'm pulling from that example with this engineering firm is like there was quite a heavy duty exercise of reflection and looking at the mirror, the company looking in the mirror saying, who are we and what do we have that is unique? And probably the fact that they had long-term employees, they had lifers, maybe wasn't super obvious or jumping off the page on day one of this. They had to actually, my point is they had to go through the exercise of really self-examining and thinking about it. And then all of a sudden the angle presents itself.
And I'll even go one further because you're 100% right. There was a ton of strategy. There's a ton of work, both sides of the table. And you look at all these different dynamics. You look at competitors, what can competitors offer? You look at the alternative, like going into different industries, what can be offered? I think for that one and for any employer branding campaign, we talked about it probably before we started recording, is just talking to your top performers, asking them the question of why did they originally apply and why are they staying? And some of your answers might surprise you. You look back at that painting company, it might be something as unique as, hey, I get to kind of feel like I'm my own boss and like you're not all over me. And all of a sudden, you know, I have a variable comp that allows me if I hit amount of percentages, like maybe there's something there about being their own boss. Maybe it's the type of projects. Maybe it's the cool. We always encourage, like specifically on employer branding, is talk to your top performers and hear from them. Like, why do you like working here? What's unique? And that's really what led to that discovery, is talking to different candidates at that organization, what made them stay. And that became this whole campaign. Yeah. So you're right. Strategy leads the day.
Tell me about a few more of these campaign examples.
Yeah, I think a last one I'll share is a construction example. And so we've been working with an organization called Wales McClellan. They're a large general contractor out of Canada. And they're pretty niche in the type of projects that they deliver. So they deal specifically in industrial and commercial projects. And so that could be tilt-ups, Amazon warehouses, that could be car dealerships. So that type of, you know, what they don't do residential, right? So they're not doing single family, multifamily, they're not doing residential projects. And for those outside of the industry, it's like, you know, so what? That's just construction, construction. But when you look at specific trades, you look at specific project managers, you look at that experience, it is different. And so we really leaned into that specialization in the industrial and commercial sector to attract talent that wants to work on those type of projects. And that led into a whole how we showcase projects, the type of projects that we worked on, the speed, the brands. And then also on that campaign, we really interviewed, you know, individuals that worked there for a long time and scaled in that business. And there's kind of a recurring theme too, is just the strategy, owning the story, and understanding as well on the back end, this creative is only as good as the type of talent that's going to apply. And I think that's where, if anyone can take anything out of our conversation today, is just rather than getting 100 applications, you only need 5. And of the 5, you only need that 1 or 2 people, right? And I think it's that classic dynamic of just being specialized in who you're trying to reach and connect with and making sure the message that you curate and build resonates with that audience. Because, you know, you go back to that doc example, you know, they don't need 100 people to work in their organization. Mm-hmm. I don't know the exact numbers. They just need the right type of people. And so it's okay to be specialized and niche. And we encourage our clients, like, it's better to scare certain people away from that story and that message, because you're actually going to be overwhelming your HR team, overwhelming your systems. And it's just easier to be clear and concise based on the data. So those are some examples. I think it just comes down to, you know, showing the work. There's some bare minimums you have to do. I think you got to show the people You got to show the tools. You got to show the work that they're doing. People are going to want to see that. And I think the other piece too, back on the employee experience, you know, this might be for organizations have a little bit more budget on recruiting, is you're kidding yourself if you think one creative asset's going to, you know, solve the day. You might need one piece of asset that's going to communicate, you know, the story of the company, the culture, the people. You might need another video asset to communicate what it's like to work there for 10 years. You might need another video asset that's a dynamic 10 to 15 second ad that's specific to the, you know, the advantage of the job, the pay. All those different pieces of content are going to speak to different things. And so it just comes down to the strategy.
I agree. I would also say that one video is better than zero videos. And if that's the big step you're making, don't make one video because you can't afford to make 10 yet. Just start with the one, but maybe know that as your brand and as your organization evolves, you're going to want to build on that. So it's not a build it once and you're done forever type exercise, but it is, you make that one big step, that one big investment in the careers page with a really sexy video, with a few like really smooth application forms, you know, that probably buys you, I don't know, 2 years of great recruiting. And then, you know, maybe it's three, whatever, you'll get to a point where you go, okay, this needs an update, or maybe we should make role specific videos or whatever. So, but I just want to be clear, like something is always better than nothing.
If I can jump in one more time, because I think there's two things I'll say to that. Cause I think I'm concerned, like, we don't want to be like this, what we're talking about today, like articles, and everyone talks about this kind of topic of employer branding. I think the biggest thing is just like, if you're listening to this today and you're driving back from a job site, it can be overwhelming. Like, where do I start? Do I write a script? Do I like hire this big agency for video? It's pretty overwhelming. I think the big piece is just going back to being authentic and being proud of your story. It doesn't have to be overly produced. It doesn't have to be overly dynamic. It's just ask yourself that question of like, talk to your employees, like, what actually is unique about working at a company? And just tell the story through that lens. It doesn't have to be overly polished. There's this kind of vanilla flavor that you see a lot of recruitment videos, like, they say the same thing, they feel the same way. You're like, it doesn't really evoke emotion. It's like, I love working here because we have amazing culture and good pay and benefits. Like, end video. It's like, that's not going to drive people forward. Mm. Understand what actually makes you different. And I'll use an example I'm just thinking of now that I still remember to this day. I probably watched it 10 years ago because I wanted to apply there. It was a millwork company out of Squamish or Whistler, and they shot this really dynamic video where it's like, you just wanted to be friends with everyone there. They had cool apparel. They went skiing. They like had a beer at the end of the video, and they were like over a fire, and they were like, you could just tell it was who they were. And I was like, wow, this is a cool vibe. It's a cool company. It's like, you could tell when they worked there. It's like, yeah, you may not get top, top pay, but you have this really cool dynamic where you're snowboarding on the evenings, or, you know, on the weekends, you're able to kind of be a craftsman. So I think their video was totally different than anything else, but it really spoke to like, what made them different. And, you know, it's okay if a lot of people didn't apply for it. So I think I really encourage people listening. It's like, just really unpack your story and just understand what's different about you, and then build around that.
In the interest of making this simple and sort of step by step, can you maybe take us through a bit of a playbook, some practical steps to follow for a listener who wanted to invest in this? Like, just tell them exactly what to do.
Yeah. I mean, 8 steps. I think the biggest thing, like you said, is just start. You know, it's easy to get super technical and overwhelmed, is just kind of just start and start telling your story. But practically, if you're looking at kind of 7-8 steps, number one, audit your current employer brand. What's back to my earlier point, either you're telling your story or someone else's. So something is being positioned in the marketplace. Be honest, audit it, look at job ads, look at your website, look at, you know, ask people.
What would be the assets that you're looking at? Like, you mentioned job ads, you mentioned website. Is there anything else that you should be having a close look at?
Yeah, I think everything your brand touches is something that a possible candidate's going to look at. And so I say website for sure, social media assets, how you talk about your projects, how you talk about your people. You look at brand in the sense of identity, of voice, of style. And so basically just look at how you're perceived in the marketplace. What are you presenting as? And so that's kind of where we look at audio. And you might have the question say, yep, this is who we are and we're doing a great job. You might say, this actually doesn't reflect, you know, who we are. We got to reposition it. And that comes down to the niche perspective of the type of work you're doing. So that's kind of the number one, is audit your brand. The second one is, you know, following that audit, define that position of who you guys are, both as an employer brand, as an organization at the marketplace. Just if what you saw in your audit wasn't correct, invest that time into defining your. And I'm happy to, you know, if there's people listening that are kind of wanting to learn more, happy to, and we'll give some book recommendations after this too, as well, of how to walk through that together. But just defining that position is super effective. Third one, interview your top performers. talk to people that have worked at your company for a long time, ask them why they're staying there, ask them what made them, attract to the role in the first place. Fourth one is, once you've done the interview, once you've done the audit, once you've done the positioning, really start to own that story, push that content to all channels. So your website, your social, your job ads, everything that you're doing, just have consistency in that story. Some of the bigger ones, kind of next step would be start to invest in that digital experience for top candidates. Really do a reverse engineer of, if I'm someone applying for my company, actually do that. Ask one of your friends, ask a colleague, go apply for my company. How do they do that? Do they send an email in? Where does the email go to? Does it bounce back? Does it take 7 days for them to get back to them? Actually go through that full experience, mm-hmm. and you're going to see some natural things to be corrected on that piece. Kind of the other piece is start showcasing that story. We talked about good people aren't looking for jobs tomorrow. It's getting into that perspective and that understanding to say, hey, introduce content to your target audience over time, whether that's relevant projects you just released, maybe it's a beautiful project. And then the last one is, going on the offensive a little bit more. Digital ads. I mean, we've seen fun, creative pieces where if you I'm not encouraging this, but for those that like to be competitive, as we all are, if you got a couple top competitors in industry, if you have a couple competitors that are out of industry, there's nothing stopping from geo-targeting Facebook, LinkedIn, digital ads to their head office with relevant ads. Like, you can get pretty creative and scrappy if your story is pretty authentic.
Let's unpack that for a second. I do actually want to click in here on some of the digital ad, because this is really like, I always think of this in two ways. Like, you can work on the brand, the image, the copy, the whatever, but then it's like, you do need eyeballs. Like, you do need to get this in front of people. So can you talk, we don't need to go super technical, Andrew, we're not talking like full-blown media buyers, so we don't need to go, don't need to go technical, but like at a high level, what would it look like to use dollars, give those dollars to Instagram or Facebook or TikTok or YouTube, and then have those dollars put your video, your ad in front of the right people in layman's terms?
Yeah, layman's terms. I mean, it goes back to that strategy piece of, you should have a persona by now of who's the right person for my company. Skill set, sure. Age, demographic, et cetera. Use that to design your digital ads. Facebook's got a pretty, all the digital platforms is a pretty good way of dynamic ads. And so you guys can create that, work with an agency. They're going to create those digital ads and just kind of start driving results. I think the other thing too is, it doesn't always have to be digital. It could be sponsoring events. It could be being active in your community. It could be looking at, what are associated activities to that target individual that they like? Dirt biking, hunting, fishing, et cetera. Running dynamic ads against that. So it just comes down to that user persona that you're going after, mm-hmm. mapping it all out, and then creating dynamic ads against that. I think the challenging piece sometimes too, and I'm sure a lot of people would relate to this, is like you dump a lot of money into those digital ads. Maybe you're flooded with a lot of candidates that aren't the best type of candidates. And so we always advise, like, if you have an X amount of dollars to spend that you're comfortable, like, just kind of pausing and saying, okay, what's the best form of investment?
I agree that for the novice, I'm not saying, hey, go take $5,000 and just willy-nilly dump it into a platform and hope for the best. That will give you a bad result. But I am encouraging people to start to dip their toe in, to start to dabble a little bit with like using platforms to run paid campaigns for their open roles. I do think that it's going to get that competitive that you will have to do that. And I think that there's value in early learning. Go and make the mistake and get an inbox full of resumes, and then to go tweak your form to add more friction so that you get rid of more tire kickers, whatever. Like, I think that it's a worthwhile thing to start exploring is all I'm saying.
100%.
Yeah,
it's that point of testing. I think one of the earlier points that I wanted to make, I think you asked that question of like, what are clients asking site partners for help for? I think we'd all love to have a lever in our businesses where you can just pull it. You win a big job, you pull the lever, 5 great candidates come into your business, they're trained up in 2 weeks, they're on the job site.
Totally.
We all want that lever, both sides. I want a new client, pull that lever. 2 new clients come in. I mean, business doesn't work that way. I mean, sometimes it does. Some weeks it feels like that, but not all the time. And I think when you look at employer branding, is you're investing, investing, investing into making it close to a lever as possible. And what I mean by that is you're consistently putting really good content out there week over week. If you don't have a job out next week, doesn't mean you can't continue to invest in your employer brand, because it's just putting into that bank of time to say, when you do need to post a job and curate that, you've kind of invested, you got that lever to pull. And say, I think that's where, like, to your point, like having content, having video assets, you've got that bank, you've got that tool, you've got those systems in place. Mm-hmm. You can start pulling that lever when it comes. It's pretty difficult when you go from zero to 100. And what I mean by that is starting to invest in that story. You've got it. You can start turning it
with
on.
With small daily budgets, you learn, you make some mistakes. I think that a lot of us are a little bit too novice or a little bit too unsophisticated when it comes to this. And I don't think it takes super long to learn. It's a few YouTube videos. It's a few $1,000 in spend. Go make the mistakes. Get your hands dirty. A year or two from now, you'll be glad you did. I do want to chuck in a couple things here before I move on to anything else, just in terms of practical steps. Okay. And I've said these in other podcasts, so I'm boring my listeners. But okay, for God's sakes, invest in company swag. Get some nice for people to wear. Ditch the Gildan t-shirts with the crappy logo. Get dry fit, get long sleeve. Ask your team what they want to wear. I think that it's absolutely a touch worth spending on to go into nice clothing, nice hats, nice jackets with a good quality brand that they love wearing. Low hanging fruit. It's not very expensive. And most of your competition are walking around with like crappy shirts that they're getting from vendors, if anything. So that's an easy one. Social media, you use your Instagram basically as a page to celebrate your employees on. Employees of the month, new career development things that have happened. If somebody got a promotion, if somebody had a kid, if somebody had like, blah, blah, like whatever, someone's birthday, you just use your Instagram as a purely like employee facing asset. And by the way, you're going to get clients by doing that anyway, because they're going to come and they're going to say, oh, look, this business really cares about their people. Let's get a reno done by them. So that's a total no-brainer that not enough people do. Another one I'm going to chuck in here, build out a structured referral program. You need to do the math in your own budget, but I'll just give you some ranges. Depending on the size, you can afford to spend anywhere from $1,000 to $3,000 on a finder's fee for a good employee who makes it through their 90-day onboarding and is committed for the long term. Like you, I'm telling you, don't tell me you can't afford it. You can afford to do that. You just don't think of it the right way. So build out a structured and incentivized referral program. Communicate that with your team. Repeat the message. Be a broken record. Keep telling your people to go find you more people and you'll reward them for it. And then the last thing we've talked about already, but a dedicated landing page, a dedicated join the team page, a career page on your website is not a difficult asset to build. You could do that in a month, get a really cool video built for it, and that will do work for you for years to come. So just a couple other practical steps to chuck in there.
Yeah, I'd echo all those. There's no shortcuts. I wish there was. I wish we could say, hey, you know, wait till the end of this podcast. We've got a surprise for you. It's going to solve all your talent needs. There's just no shortcut. It's consistency. It's quality. It's investing. The swag thing is an interesting one too. I think you nailed it. We invest a lot in our swag. We went Carhartt head to toe we got a new brand rolling out and people wear it. They talk about it. They're excited about it. So all those points that you made are bang on. I think we've seen our clients investing.
Yeah, like my Docs Unlimited shirt. Like this is a nice quarter zip. It's the right size. Doesn't make me look fat or boxy. I mean, I don't know. You tell me. You guys will let me know in the comments. But it's a total no brainer. You had wanted to talk to me a little bit about, and I think this is a really interesting conversation, kind of a segue here at the end, but some trends that you're seeing in like how B2B buyers are buying in 2024 and the ramifications that that has on contractors and home service businesses broadly in the way that they do both marketing and in the way that they do employer brand.
Yeah, I'll rattle off some quick points because I think we use these to really start conversations with our clients and just to really shift an understanding of what we're seeing in the marketplace. And I think a lot of our conversation today, we've talked about this before the podcast and during, it's like, you look at employer brand, you look at marketing with a similar lens, at least we do. It's kind of core fundamentals, specialization, following the data, having good strategy and driving creative that is inspired by that. And so a couple points I'll list off, which if at the very least they just spark conversations for people listening on the show with their internal teams, that's great. Because I think we're often bombarded with data points that we think are correct and oftentimes they aren't. So And just for the context here too, I'm thinking traditionally in B2B here, and we're looking at more complex purchasing decisions. So this is not a $2,000-$3,000 decision. This is kind of $50,000-$100,000, whether it's services or products. Mm-hmm. Think equipment, things like that. So I think the biggest thing is this question of how important is marketing? And we hear a lot from our clients, it's sales, sales, sales. We're all sales. 100% believe in that. I'm a sales guy. I love sales. I think a couple stats here from Gartner that jump out is 94% of B2B buyers research products or services online before they ever talk to sales. 94%. So pretty close to 100. And buyers are 57% of the way through their decision before they actually engage with sales. If you think about that from a B2B perspective, a lot of these buyers are kind of doing self-directed analysis, research, they're reading case studies, they're doing evaluations. And it's pretty phenomenal. So we look at marketing, you look at the way you position your brand, like that's what customers are seeing. And so they're doing that self-directed study. On the sales component, buyers of complex deals, they spend roughly 17% of their time talking to sales, you know, similar kind of methodology. But if they're talking to three vendors, which is commonplace for B2B, you're not just talking to one person. That means if there's three vendors, they're only talking to your sales team of your organization for 5-6% of that entire buyer journey experience. So once again, putting emphasis on that self-directed study. So those two things really tell our team to say, hey, you got to be investing in marketing and you got to be investing in brand, because just like for anyone on this call, when we make our purchase decisions, you know what you want. I'll use a car as an example. I'll use technical MacBook products. We're doing self-directed research. We know what we want to buy. We aren't always engaging sales. And I think that's a big piece. On that note, and I'll keep going because I know we're 10 on time.
How does that change the role of salespeople? Like how should businesses be thinking about, let's just say that's true. And by the way, I think you're low on the 57%. We have a friend of the show, it comes on not infrequently, Marcus Sheridan. He's a digital marketer. You might know him, yeah. He's great awesome. Book. Yeah. Written a bunch of great books. He says it's 80%. Like 80% of the decision is done by the time they talk to you. So I think you're low there. But anyway, what I was going to ask is, how do you think that changes the role of the salesperson or the sales team?
Great question. What we're seeing is more integration between marketing and sales. And so we're seeing those teams, they used to sit separately. We're seeing them closer and fused together. So there's got to be a higher touch point. And we don't get too technical. This could be a separate podcast on B2B, but where is the buyer in that journey? Sometimes sales is very active. Sometimes sales is not active. So we see the sales team and the marketing team working much closer together. We call that account-based marketing. But we're seeing that work very closely. We're seeing high touch, high consultative sales as well too. Mm-hmm. So now these are general stereotypes. Different products and different services are consumed differently. But I think that's what we're generally seeing is marketing-led sales or account-based sales. Sure. And I agree. Marcus Sheridan, love his book. They Ask You Answer. He does an awesome job. I think he's the, like when I read that book, you take pages and pages of note of content marketing. Other things that jump out, we talk about a younger demographic. Over 45% of B2B buyers are kind of 25 to 35 years old. And it's, that's a generalization here, but digital channels really matter to those group. They expect, a direct consumer D2C level experience of buying. So they expect that Amazon level self-serve, self-consumer. So the B2B buyer journey is changing. And I say this a lot to my industrial clients. If they're looking in the construction industrial space and they say, hey, we're all relationships, we're all driven. The buyer group is getting bigger. And so when you look at industrial B2B buying, like it's not one person. You may have a great relationship with sales with one person, but the buyer group is made up of 7, 8, 9, sometimes 10 people. There's a CFO involved. There's a procurement lead. There's the site lead. There's the technical lead. They all get their own research, their own information. It's hard to sell to the entire audience. And so in that audience, now you're seeing younger buyers that expect different things. I think the last piece before we kind of on the B2B sales side, it's generally the biggest challenge with marketing is we need leads. Leads, 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 leads. Marketing has to drive leads. I need inbound forms. When you look at B2B, your buyers aren't always active in that quarter. And what I mean by that is major purchase decisions, i.e. switching a bank or switching a service provider, they happen once every 5 years, maybe. That's what Gartner's telling us. These bigger purchase decisions don't happen every year. And so B2B buyers, like your target buyer, that means they're not in the market all the time. And so if they're in the market once every 5 years, that means that 20% of your buyers are only active that year. on a quarterly basis, that means that quarter only 5% of your target buyers are active. So what does that tell us? If your marketing program's saying, I need leads, 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 but only 5% of your buyers are active in that channel, in that quarter, you may have some friction there. And so we often say to our clients, like, how do you nurture that other 95% that may not be buying in that quarter? Because they're eventually going to jump into that buying journey. And so thought leadership, marketing, case studies, events, that fully integrated marketing program. And I use this parallel to our topic today of employer branding, much the same way. 5% of your target candidate is looking for jobs that quarter, but 95% of your target candidates, operations manager, foreman, superintendents, they're not looking, but they're consuming. Mm-hmm. How do you reach them? How do you put out content? How do you get in front of them so that when they are in that buyer journey, whether they had a layoff, whether they lost a couple of big jobs, they're like, hey, I've been looking at, you know, BTA over the last couple of years, I'm ready to go now. And the last piece is the thought leadership piece, which is we work with a lot of our clients on complex kind of buyer journeys, and they always hear this word thought leadership, and it's similar to personal branding where people roll their eyes and say, oh, I don't want to talk about it. You know, Gartner has an interesting perspective of, you know, 16% of buyers that find thought leadership, and I define thought leadership as really technical articles, discovery, high quality content that's industry leading. 16% of buyers that find that thought leadership useful in their journey, they went on to buy their services. And 33% said that if the leadership, the thought leadership is good, it has a good perspective on their perception. So a lot of stats we just threw at you. I love stats. Our you know, we talk about strategy, our agency loves that stats, but the B2B industry is changing and it's dynamic and it's moving. And I think you need to look at marketing the same way. So we could do a whole podcast on
thought leadership piece is funny. I think a lot of people will remember, you know, when TED Talks became a thing in the early 2010s and they became super, super popular and we all watched them and we all loved them. And I would say more recently, their content has sort of trailed off a little bit, but that's neither here nor there. There was this really funny spoof that they did. It was like I am a thought leader. And you know I'm a thought leader because there's a picture, there's a globe on the screen. Here I go on a random diatribe. And he just like does this amazing spoof of like the quote unquote like Simon Sinek-esque like thought leader dude doing his keynote. Yeah. And I think we all watched that, laughed hysterically and go, I don't want to be that. Like that's, you know, that's cringe, that's lame. And it is. That's not what we mean when we say thought leadership. In this space, this can be very, very you. This can be very personal and very real and very authentic. We're not talking about putting together some half-baked slides and going to TEDx and trying to do a talk. Like you say, technical articles, opinion pieces, small blog posts. It can literally be something as simple. If you want to get scrappy, it can be selfie videos of you and your truck driving about something that you're thinking about in your space, about leadership, about product, about your clients, about whatever. I just would encourage people not to throw the baby out with the bathwater on the thought leadership piece just because so many thought leaders are total That's my quick side note.
And I'll give a shout out here because I believe Justin from Caliber Projects was on the podcast recently. And
he was.
If he's listening to the end of this episode, he's going to give us a text, one of us. So this is a test for him. But I'll use him as an example. And he hasn't done this, but let's say he did from a thought leadership perspective, because it'll be good for our listeners to be like, okay, what does thought leadership look like? If Justin, and I would encourage him to do that, this, if he wrote a very complex article about how Caliber Projects moves projects forwards on schedule, how they accelerate schedule, how they work with their subtrades, basically how they de-risk a project, you better believe private sector developers, public sector developers are going to read that and say, wow, these Caliber guys, like they have their own forces. They have their own carpenters, their own equipment. Like he's actually articulating how they do that. And he might have some push and pull with this team. Like you're giving away our secrets. But if his target audience is reading those articles and they're in the middle of a project where their contractor is delayed, where they're looking and saying, I don't even know if I can build anymore because, you know, I got money at 9% now and my schedules are all over the place. And Justin and the Caliber team put out a phenomenal article about how they keep pace and they drive accelerated project delivery. Like that is good thought leadership, and there's substance and quality. That's what we're referring to. Not just like what you said about the TED Talk and the Globe of like, you know, people just putting like fluffy pieces together. And no one reads. It's like technical stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we're always attracted to on LinkedIn. Like when I'm scrolling LinkedIn and someone does this, that I look up to, does this like breakdown of like how I scaled my creative agency from 10 million to 50 million. I'm like, reading every word because I'm like, this is so cool because they've done it.
I mean, look, if anyone wants to see a non-cringe version of thought leadership, go watch Matt Reisinger's stuff. And obviously not everyone can do it at that scale, but Matt has built an unbelievable brand and following and a website and an entire business. I mean, the guy's what he is doing, I mean, I know what he's doing behind the scenes. The guy's a seriously smart dude, and what he's built over the last 10 years is so impressive. But this all started out because he's a total construction nerd, and he wants to make construction nerd videos, and look what that turned into. So all I'm saying is there's a way to do this that is totally not cringe and totally you. So anyway, really great point. We're almost out of time here, but you have a really good little book, like sort of additional reading homework list you wanted to share.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a nerd myself, self-proclaimed, so I can say that. I love to read. I think as an agency, it's our responsibility to be always learning and progressing in different perspectives. So I've got a bunch of books. Some of them are aligned with our talk today about employer branding, but I'll just list them, then we can link to them in the show notes. First one is Positioning by Al Rice. I apologize if I pronounced that wrong. It's an older book, but it's a phenomenal book on positioning. So a lot of our talk today spoke about defining your story, owning your story. It's a great read that talks about what goes into positioning and how to define that story. You know, on the definition of positioning, I know this book's been mentioned a lot, but Traction by Gino Wickman. Earlier parts of the chapter, they talk about his story and defining your niche. So that's if you're gonna read those two books together, that's great. A book that I love, which is probably one on not a lot of lists, is called Humanizing B2B by Paul Cash. It's a UK author, but he really talks about some of the points we spoke about earlier about humanizing B2B and what does that journey look like. ABM, account-based marketing. Back to your question of marketing and sales, how do they work together? ABM is B2B by Sangram is a phenomenal book that just talks about account-based marketing. The Brand Gap is a book that's probably been shared before. It just gives really good verb and descriptions on what does brand look like. My personal favorite book, which is super niche, it's called The Titanium Economy. It's by 3 McKinsey Partners. It sounds like it's going to be a super dry, boring read when you think about those two things, McKinsey and Partners, but it dives into like the industrial revolution that's coming in all of our sector about AI and about data and all these different pieces. If we're in construction, we're industrial, and like it's encouraging the sense of what's coming. So I'd encourage really good read on looking ahead. Never Lose an Employee Again by Joey Coleman. A lot of my notes and ideas came from this. They talk about the 8-step employee journey. When someone onboards a team member, what does that look like? The last one, which you and I talked about before we started recording, which is, you know, why not finish the podcast on more of a touchy note? The Elon Musk biography. I'm a bit of an Elon Musk fan. I mean, it's hard not to see what he's been able to accomplish, but we talked about like executive brand, and like him or love him, or hate him or love him, Elon Musk is pretty bold with what he says. And I think what's encouraging about that is you can pretty clearly tell if you're someone looking for a job, whether you should apply at Elon's company or not. And then I think there's a lot of people that would never want to work at Elon's company. And there's probably a lot of people who would want to work on one of his companies. Fast paced, dynamic, not great work-life balance, but hey, you want to be bold and try something. So his book biography, I just found it really interesting. I'm sure lots of people on the call have read it. So those are kind of some of the books that speak to employer branding, speak to marketing. And then happy to share more in a note.
You said it all, my friend. Where can people connect with you or connect with Site Partners?
Yeah, I'd say the best LinkedIn. We preached social media and engagement. So LinkedIn, Andrew Hansen, hopefully you can find me. And then sitepartners.ca, www.sitepartners.ca is our website. We've got a new brand coming out in the next couple of weeks, which we're pretty excited about. But those would be the two places that I'm able to be found.
Thank you so much for doing this today, Andrew. Great notes, great stats, great thoughts, extremely rigorously researched. I really, really appreciate the time, and I'm a big ambassador, and I give a big endorsement to anyone who wants to invest in their employer brand. It is one of those things that pays massive ROI for years and years and years down the road, and this whole battle for talent is not going to get easier anytime soon. So I would encourage you to get going now. Thank you, Andrew. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.